Believe it or not, you can improve your situation remarkably with one choice. Although my client, Robert, sold his company for $1 billion, money was never his guiding force. His guiding value was a steady focus on this one choice. Robert had humble working class origins, but as he grew from engineer to manager to CEO and eventual successful exit, he chose to focus on one thing that most avoid due to their fears or discomfort. What was it Robert prioritized? Communicating. Specifically, Robert invested in guidance for public speaking, storytelling, and presenting throughout his career. Why choose to repeatedly put himself through this process? Because, Robert told me, communication confidence and capability, and enjoying it, is a number one priority for winning, from initial promotions to his MBO finance deal to competitive pitch wins with his new venture, and then the market differentiation story which led to his eventual acquisition. Now semi-retired, Robert still refers clients to me at all stages of their career because he knows they will enjoy growth in confidence and great results with me. To choose your communication focus and enjoy it like Robert did, go to growthpresenter.com for your free confidence call. That's growthpresenter.
Hello, Thor.
Hey, Matt.
How you doing?
Well, good, except I was just looking at my own background and I suddenly realized my head was spinning. I was like, have I put myself into some kind of trance state just before I speak to Matt? This is perfect. I've gone into like some kind of microdosing.
Is today a dose day?
What's that, dude?
Is today a dose day?
Maybe, if there's nobody from any federal agencies listening.
Yeah. Wait.
So, have you read this?
Ayahuasca in My Blood. No, I have not. Peter Gorman. No, I have not.
I just looked him up because I thought he'd make a great guest for the show, but sadly, he seems to have passed away a few years ago.
Oh, no.
He liked to drink the alcohol quite a lot, as well as doing a lot of ayahuasca. Anyway. Yeah, man. Thanks for coming and speaking to me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Cool, man. So what's the story? You say in your LinkedIn something like you work off a different playbook. Like if I wanted you to be my coach for this, how does it work?
In terms of my microdosing coaching? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do work off a different playbook. And the answers are all inside. Our biggest traumas, our biggest strength, the degree to which we lean into our darkness is the degree to which we can stand and share and love in our light. That's kind of a different set of rules than most people would be working with.
Cool. And then tell me about the darkness one. That straight away intrigues me. How do you mean?
Yeah, just this notion of leaning into our traumas. Psychedelic pioneer Dr. Gabor Mate invites us to explore, or these are his quote, his words, that we can liberate the energy of trauma into the energy of life. And so that with that, you know, hey, we can lean in, we can do this work, we can do the plant medicine work, we can do the microdosing, we can do the meditations, the breath work, the journaling, the moving our bodies. And again, starting to liberate that energy. And what does the energy of life look like? More joy, more love, more connection, more flow state, all the good stuff that we all want more of.
How did you get into it though? Like what's your backstory?
Yeah, I did the corporate America thing in Chicago and had a deep healing. What set me free is I sold a business on my 35th birthday. It was October 16th, 2014. Well, I was supposed to be out hooting and hollering with the new brass and celebrating all of the opportunity and money and responsibility and career path trajectory, et cetera. All I could think about was this path of service that I'm on right now. And 2 months later, I was down in the jungles of Costa Rica having a profound healing with ayahuasca. And that set in motion this path. I planned for 6 months to untangle myself from the mess that I'd created in corporate America. There was a buyout involved, but it ended up being 11 months. I walked away from my career December 9th, 2015, and I haven't looked back.
There's a pattern here. Maybe. You talk about walking away from your words, mess you created, but it sounded... it's kind of aspirational to a lot of people because you're talking about selling a business. What am I missing?
Yeah, it was soulless work. It was following all of our societal definitions of success, but I was miserable. The more that I was obedient to our societal definition of success, the sicker I became. So I got very curious and took a chance with psychedelics, took a chance with psilocybin, and that ultimately led to the ayahuasca. And all of this started with an earnest meditation practice. And just finding something more soulful. You know, I was miserable. And I had to drink, use alcohol and pop pills to deal with my reality, like so many in the corporate world.
Well, not just the corporate world, so many in the world generally.
In the world, period, yes. I guess
people are numbing. Well, what are they doing? They're numbing the pain.
Yeah, they're numbing the pain of the pain of being cut off from the work that they're here to do, I believe. But the pain of engaging something that might not be in alignment with their true self, with their authentic self.
Okay, so imagine this scenario. Imagine, and it's not too hard to imagine for me, imagine I wanted to come to you for you to coach me in this journey. Let's role play it as if you're you are the coach in this context. I mean, I am a professional coach, but not in the same world as you. So yeah, how would we proceed?
Yeah, my offerings, I have a 10-week magic and microdosing mentorship program where I guide people on microdosing journey. I've guided over 100 people in my book, Worth the Fight. I wrote about the high dose, but I saw a big shift in the market 2 to 3 years ago, and I've been spending all of my time, effort, and energy focusing on microdosing and guiding people, holding people's hand on this path and getting them up to speed with this medicine. And we leverage the microdosing to deepen into meditation and contemplative journaling and moving our bodies and maybe some breath work, time out in nature, et cetera. And the first question I would ask you is what do you want?
I want the feeling of connection to purpose that I had on ayahuasca too. So the feeling of realizing that, assuming my brain was still functioning, everything else could be gone. And I could still do the coaching work that I do that feels so precious to me. So, yeah, that's what I want. I want to live in that clarity of connection.
And why aren't you doing that right now? And what do you think is in the way?
Yeah, a lot of the time I am, to be honest. So I'm not pretending that I'm super disconnected. Like, it's pretty good. It's really the integration side of it I'm interested in, and how I integrate it into what we could call it everyday life, you know, real life, if you will. Yeah. That's what I want.
Beautiful to hear that you are in a position right now where you're feeling good and you've got loads and loads of blessings and you like the work that you're doing. And I sense that there's a yearning for more, potentially, and perhaps a way to get more out of microdosing, a way to utilize the benevolent plant spirit to tap into some of the journeys that you had with ayahuasca. And ultimately to ground these integration practices that will help you more reliably source that clarity and that joy from within.
Yeah, that's fair. Because what month are we in? This is March. So yeah, the last year has been a time of pretty radical change. So then I've had some ayahuasca journeys where I had some really deep, for me, you know what it's like. It's one of those things, isn't it? You talk about it to someone who hasn't experienced it, and it could sound like you're speaking cliches, but it's like when you just get it given to you in that way. it's there, isn't it? So yeah, it's how to get something there about how to get more from it. It's really more how to give more. Again, that sounds like a cliche, but that's the truth. So how can I be giving more with the learnings I've had in a more integrated, consistent way? Like, yeah, I guess that's what I would want potentially from working with someone like you.
Yes. And that's where the magic happens. Deepening in, you're right, giving more, more devotion to these integration practices, which I believe are spiritual practices too. This is, we can all talk, everybody talks, blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of good talk in the world, but how are we showing up for our meditation practice? How are we journaling our thoughts when our mind is feeling chaotic and we're feeling a lot of heaviness? Have we tried breath work? Have we tried the Wim Hof method as a means to boost our energy levels and to cultivate that clarity? Have we explored the NSDR, Dr. Huberman's NSDR, to downregulate our nervous system and to deepen into best practices around sleep? You know, I believe sleep is a superpower for the world that we're shifting into. If we're getting that good 8 to 9 hours consistently, we're showing up with vim and vigor and fight and fire while the rest of the world is getting a crummy 6 hours.
Yeah, that's so true, man. The whole sleep thing. I was just saying that just now because I was doing a stand-up comedy gig at the weekend. So I've done 4 now and I'm
amazing.
Really enjoying that. But yeah, thank you. But I was back in my bed like midnight or something. And then my brain naturally wakes me up, you know, 4 or 5 a.m., which is a good time for me usually. It's a really creative time. I have a coffee. I do some writing or journaling. But when your brain wakes you up at 4 or 5 anyway, even though you went to bed at midnight, like I like you say, 8 to 9 hours, I feel superhuman after that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that pursuit of comedy is kind of diametrically opposed to getting good rest. And I would invite the possibility of maybe exploring the NSDR as a means on those days, because obviously this is and there's, it's awesome that you're doing the comedy, and it takes so much courage to stand up kind of naked in front of people and try to make them laugh, you know, I did a bunch of comedy here in Chicago as well. And that was a big part of my personal development and growth, leaning into my growth edge and kind of taking my power back. But this idea that you could take a half an hour in the afternoon or an hour and do this slow breathing, non-sleep, deep restoration, which is apparently 5 times more restorative than sleep itself.
Say it again. Non-sleep. What was the third word?
Deep rest.
Oh,
non-sleep, deep rest. NSDR.
Cool.
And it's essentially slow breathing, longer exhales than the inhales.
Yeah.
And deeply, deeply restorative practice that we can do. I do after lunch every day, 20 to 25 minutes. And it's the chillest, most peaceful 25 minutes I have all day long.
Yeah, that sounds cool. So it's meditative. Is that
very, yes. And there's science to support that it can boost our dopamine up to 65% too. So we wake up, it's almost like we're putting ourselves on the chart. We're the iPhone and we're putting ourselves on the charging dock. Yeah. And then we come out of that and dopamine is less the molecule of reward. It's more the molecule of crave, of get shit done, of more, of drive.
Mm-hmm. So non-sleep, deep rest. That's cool. Is that something, have you written on that? Like, would I find something you've written on it, or is that something you'd recommend that I go find on the internet, as it were?
Yeah, I would search NSDR Huberman. He's got a bunch of different, he coined the term. It's a secular approach to yoga nidra.
Yeah.
And, you know, I personally don't use the scripts anymore. I just focus on my breath and just longer exhales than inhales. And I turn on some nature music, and it's like this liminal state between the dream world and the waking world.
Cool. Yeah, because I do use some of the Wim Hof breath work, but honestly, I don't do it every day. I found that it gave me tinnitus a little bit, and maybe I was breathing incorrectly, but I loved the effect of it, and I got up to, well, doesn't really matter how long you're holding for, does it? I guess 3 minutes something, which that kind of felt cool in its own right, just to have done that. But, and I love the feeling of it. And it becomes very like a meditation for me. Like my brain is going to other places while I'm in that hold or whatever we call it. But the Huberman thing, that's brand new to me. So go on then, keep going. Is there anything else? What, like, I sense you feel very non-capitalist now, because like I'm trying to engage here and go, come on, sell me your coaching, brother. And you're like giving me some cool stuff, but you're not selling me anything. So invitation to sell.
I would say what's in the way right now of you adopting these practices? What's in the way of a deeper devotion to psychedelic integration, to your spiritual practices, to your higher power?
Probably just consistency. So, I mean, obviously, well, I'll get the word obviously out of my mouth and let that wash away, because it's not obvious. Let me think. What's in the way? I guess what's in the way is I haven't made it a part of my daily routine. So I do have a morning routine, which is drink one pint of water with some lemon juice before anything else happens. And then if I'm on the island, I'll then make a coffee and do a little bit of writing and plan my day. But if I'm down on mainland Scotland, I'll feed the cats because animals need to be looked after. And then I'll have coffee and then I'll write again. But again, I'm not doing that as consistently as I would like. So I guess it's just building it into it's selecting the routine and then living it. Like, I'm fine to have a routine. Yeah, is something getting in the way? Well, only me. It can only be me getting in the way, Matt. So true. I can't think of anything else. Can you?
Yeah, my mentor, Akshay Nanavati, he wrote a book called Firvana that was endorsed by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I love how Akshay invites us to choose a worthy struggle, or struggle will choose you. So shifting the frame around these practices, and it sounds like you have loads and loads of blessings to build around. And of course, everything is an iterative process. And we only know what we know. You're in a position where you're putting out these aspirations to potentially deepen in further. So we build around the blessings that we do have. And we choose this struggle of consistent Wim Hof breath work in the morning, the struggle of maybe turning that dial to cold in the morning, you know, and feeling that cold exposure, getting that big boost in dopamine, big boost in norepinephrine, scheduling the time, maybe having some better boundaries with tech. I know that's tech is quite, it's beautiful. We're here having this wonderful conversation. You're in Scotland. Geez, I'm in Chicago. This is amazing. But this idea that tech and social media and these addictive devices are wreaking havoc on our mental health, and potentially adopting a digital minimalism philosophy, so we can have more of a sturdy, dialed in bandwidth where we're not leaking so much energy to all these little dopamine dings, bings, and clicks that we all have to move through.
That's a good point. And it's not just the psychological addiction, it's the physical effect. So I actually ran a poll on LinkedIn a few months ago now, when I first started getting some neck challenges, and I asked if anyone else had suffered from some kind of tech neck, in other words, some kind of pain or discomfort in the neck and or associated nerve issues with their arms. Because I don't know whether that's what I've got going on, but I have quite a cold right arm, which is often, it feels like it doesn't belong to me for periods of time. And if I use my devices, which of course I use for work, as well as, you know, as we do, browsing Spotify or whatever we're doing, yeah, it's amazing. I think I seem to remember it was over 70% of respondents. So I guess they're self-selecting, but over 70% of respondents said yes, they had, you know, really uncomfortable neck symptoms. And
me too.
Yeah, so it's huge. I mean, it's huge. So that's an interesting idea, though, the idea of setting a boundary around that. So, for example, could I live with, well, the Wim Hof breathing, I use something off my... See, this is the thing. Everything becomes linked to that damned phone, doesn't it? So, like, if I was going to do the Wim Hof breathing, I'd find a Wim Hof video, or I'd be using the Wim Hof app, whatever. It's all on my phone. So even to go and do those positive things, or I listen to like a Icarus, do you say Icarus? Icarus, like a ayahuasca
gross, yeah.
Music or whatever. It's on my phone. Like everything's on the phone.
Yeah, I think that you know, we can still, there's still some safeguards. You know, we delete some of the apps off of our phone. There's airplane mode to make it less, you know, to not be able to essentially set up these, intentionally set up friction to make it more difficult to utilize. And that is something, and I'm by all means, I have not figured this out, but this is something I'm a lot stronger at and a lot better at. I'm actually doing a course right now with Dr. Cal Newport called Life of Focus. And I'm really excited about this, kind of revisiting some of these principles of, and he's really, I mean, MIT grad, computer scientist, professor of computer science at Georgetown, tenured, super productive. I mean, he writes a best-selling book every other year, podcaster, family man, et cetera. And I just love his outlook, very sane way. He's never had a traditional social media account. And he's kind of the, you know, just very conscious strategies for minimizing the distraction of tech and having this more fluid channel of our bandwidth that we can channel in the direction of our serving our clients, of doing the work that we're here to do, of, you know, embracing the struggle of the journey within, like we talked about, and you know, all the practices that we've mentioned are all scientifically proven to cultivate self-awareness. So we can cultivate more of that joy, more of that love, more of the truth of our being, which is love.
Well, on that, the truth about being love, is that something that came to you from your ayahuasca journey or journeys? I don't know how many you've done.
Yeah, I've done many journeys. It's been some years now, but yeah, there's a Beyond Love that I wrote about in early on in Worth the Fight, and you know, that's been a central driver of my quest. Is how is it that a 35-year-old man that had good parents and friends and family and loved ones around, how is it that I felt love for the very first time in my life when I'm down in the jungles of Costa Rica with a bunch of strangers drinking ayahuasca? How is that possible? And why is that happening? And what can I do about that to share this love with other people and to invite the possibility that is the truth of our being, and it's inside, and we can peel back all these layers to soften into that reality.
So how is that possible?
We do the inner work.
How is it possible that that's the first time you felt?
Oh, Bullshit Incorporated did a number on, you know, convincing me that this reality was something different other than what it really is. And that's the alcohol and the prestige and the power and all these things that were supposed to satiate this yearning for meaning did not ultimately do their job. And you know, that again, you know, taking a flyer on this back in it was 10 years ago that I had my first experience with psilocybin, out with friends, feeling safe, you know, how this opened up my heart and allowed me to mend past hurts, you know, this, you know, trauma in my nervous system. We only know what we know. And the lens of reality that I had was based on the unprocessed trauma in my nervous system, and getting in there and healing that childhood sexual trauma, letting that go, finishing the trauma cycle was grace. And it opened up this completely new reality for me.
The new reality, like how do we, so I'll give you an example of one that's come to me. I have a new paradigm, like a new way of looking at the world because of those journeys. But the world still has, for example, war. Like, I've got my own way of coping with that. But what are your thoughts on that? Because it's a reality for too many people.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Our human family's at war right now. There's a lot of pain and suffering. And, you know, I think that for me, the safeguard against that is giving myself fully each day to my purpose. And that's all that I can do. That's the only thing that's within my control. And I believe that we're shifting into the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. And this is the collective ego that is, you know, gripping so tightly and that doesn't want to have the change, that doesn't want to have psychedelic assisted therapy and these modalities be integrated into the culture, that doesn't want to heal these generational traumas that we've been passing down from through the ages.
Yeah. So let's take a, this is going to someone that hasn't experienced this kind of thing, this is going to sound crazy, but the example I would take is, if you sat the US military leaders or whoever pulls the strings, I don't know if it's Mr. Biden or if it's other people, I suspect it's not him, but you know what I mean, like whoever's in charge in the US, and you sat them down with whoever's in charge in Russia and China, and if you could get them all to share an ayahuasca journey together, like I would say that at the end of that night, they would break bread. And they would go home and find a way to get rid of all nuclear weapons and cooperate with each other. Now, someone listening to that would just say, Thor, you sound like a crazy hippie loon.
I think that's the truth, though. But getting, you know, our leaders, our world leaders to imbibe in a journey like that and is very unlikely, but who knows. You know, the things are shifting and this is going to be a massive paradigm shift, and you know, this idea that there's all this fighting and chaos and discord and social injustice and all of this pain and suffering, all the while we have a climate crisis and a world that we could all be much better stewards for Mother Earth and the potential that things could potentially get to a point where they're so bad that it's like we don't really have a choice but to come together.
Yeah, like I guess you nor I know. Well, by definition, we don't know what's going to happen and what is possible and what isn't possible. So just because it obviously sounds unlikely to me too, but just because it sounds unlikely doesn't mean we shouldn't suggest it or put it out there as an idea. So I with my stand-up comedy, what I'm testing is, you could, for want of a better description, you could call it anti-war comedy, but it's mixed in with other things that are potentially more relatable. So I'm talking about relationships, sex, dating apps, and then dropping in some surprising, again, like I said, we could call it anti-war, but it's ways of, what I'm looking for is to give people a paradigm shift about something that we've been presented as if it's normal. Like as if it's normal to, inverted commas, serve. I know America's big on that. You know, service is like this amazing thing. Well, service is an amazing thing, but we're conflating two things, because serving someone, you know, a cup of tea or coffee or a nice meal, or it's very different to dropping bombs from a drone on a wedding party. But both those things come under this term service. Well, so how do we present this better vision or idea? I'm trying to do it with comedy at the same time as just living my purpose. That was what you said, and that's, I guess, what I would say I'm doing with my coaching. I don't know if you're gonna have an answer or not. I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you weaving in consciousness into this practice of comedy and this creative arts and an opportunity for you to share and maybe impact a few people. And all the while you're strengthening your messaging and your understanding. And it's a blessing. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing. And what was coming to mind when we were talking about the you know, inviting possibility. This is something that has been so striking for me on my path. Dr. Chris Ryan, he wrote a book called Sex at Dawn, and he also wrote a book called Civilized to Death. But in Sex at Dawn, he cites and invites a different perspective of our evolutionary roots and evolutionary past. And this idea that we share 98% of the DNA from the patriarchal chimpanzees, very aggressive, very competitive, mm-hmm. but we also share, and this understanding of the chimpanzee is basically our understanding of our evolutionary roots. Hey, this is where we came from. We're just a bunch of aggressive chimps. But the reality is that we also share 98% of the DNA with the matriarchal bonobo that's collaborative, that's loving, that is again matriarchal. The women, the female apes, they you know, kind of group their energies together to combat male aggression, mm-hmm. and everyone in the troop, they're all getting it. They're all getting sex, and the women are giving the sex to the male apes. Yeah. So there's no like aggression because everybody's getting some. Everybody's peaceful. It's chill. It's like, all right, this is good. Like, why would I want to fight when I think that this is an opportunity for us to rethink again our evolutionary past. The fact that and the way that I took. What I took from this is that yes, that we're equally predisposed to this aggressive, competitive nature. That's and we need that energy at times to get shit done and move through this big world, the crazy world. But we also need this collaborative, kind of softened, more peaceful disposition. More patient disposition. Yeah. And I think that if we, you know, our energies are yanging over here with this aggressive, you know, patriarchal systems and potentially harmonizing these systems with a more fun, loving, playful, collaborative, open, connection that is also within inside of us. So we get to choose.
Okay, cool. Well, have you got, like, what would be your best example of a, like, a case study or a transformation story with one of your clients? Would you be able to give me an example? You don't have to name someone, of course, if it's confidential, but, like, what a before and after example?
Yes, I'd be delighted to. It was a recent client. We'll call her Erin. She was unaware of this notion that we have these bonobo energies within inside of us, that we have collaboration and that this piece of knowledge helped her challenge the conventional narrative, and it helped her open up to maybe some of her desires and some of her sexual libidinous without shame. You know, mm-hmm. to just kind of own, like, hey, this is who I am. And for the longest time, I thought that there was something wrong with me and something that I've repressed this, as opposed to leaning into it and owning it and being raw and real and not having to carry around that shame and the guilt and all of that, you know, this inauthenticity of living malaligned to the truth of her being.
So is that a client then? Is that client story?
Yeah, client story. You know, that very notion that we're just talking about liberated a lot of energy within inside of her.
Do you think you'd happen to go down the path of talking about like sex? So do you think there's, I guess I'm going to answer my own question as I ask it. Do you think there's like a creative force, like a positive creative force with sex?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's two channels in which we can channel it into our creative expression, into creating things, into building things and bringing life and love and sharing our unique gift with the world, through our actions. And then there's channeling it through this miracle of procreation and having children and absolutely there's you know the and what comes to mind is Napoleon Hill's sex transmutation, this idea that we can channel this sexual energy and channel it into our work. And there's you know, maybe an invitation that, and I know for me personally, I'll be vulnerable and to know when I started understanding my sexual energy, that's when everything started to shift with me years ago. I had an epiphany while I was watching pornography in my early 30s. And I was just thinking, Matt, what are you doing? Like, you should be sleeping with these women, not like sitting here, like jerking off and like giving all my energy to the computer when yeah. I'm hapless and there's virtually nothing left to give to my purpose, to my partners that I was dating. And from that point, being more mindful and taking some time away and realizing, whoa, this, yeah, pornography doesn't serve me, doesn't serve at all. And so creating some distance from that was a big part that probably started my transformation, even years before the meditation was like, all right, you know, having that awareness of this is not serving and I need this energy and I don't want to be giving it away haphazardly.
That's a really strong point, Matt. I think as a first action, I can't speak for women, but for men, as a first action, being mindful of their consumption of that pornography, such a good starting place, man. Because I totally agree with you. It's one of those things that, again, is so accessible now through phones. And when I'm 50, so when I was, you know, a teenager and first looking for that kind of material, you had to kind of either try and convince someone older to buy it for you in a newsagent, or you would find it in a bag under a park bench or something, you know what I mean? An actual magazine. And it was nowhere near as graphic as what's just readily available now. So yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I was cured of looking at that kind of thing at all, really, by the first ayahuasca journey. It just kind of took away the desire to look for that kind of thing at all. And it didn't make me any less sexual. I'm still really a very sexual being, but that isn't really a strong component of it anymore for me. So yeah, I think that's sapping a lot of people's kind of creativity and their positive energy. It can only discourage people, I would say.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's a maladaptive programming that gets, of course, there's nothing wrong with sex. And there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with masturbation, but when we're viewing the kind of pornography too, that brings up into question. It's like really aggressive and very anti-women, it's horrific. And it's, you know, and because I don't watch it anymore, doesn't mean that I don't know what's going on there. And it's, and that's something that's on my radar is like, hey, how do we harmonize that? How do we, this is awful. This programming is this psychic energy is in the minds of our young people that are consuming this and watching this. Like you said, it's so ubiquitous. Everybody has a smartphone and it's just a few buttons and the novelty and what you see on there is it's insane. When, you know, I'm 44, a few years younger than you. And yeah, we had to get a magazine and that would be something that again, it just wasn't accessible like it is now. This is a big problem. It's not talked about much because there's a lot of what I affectionately call bullshit incorporated limiting belief scarcity programs that want to, there's all these taboos that make talking about sex energetically, you know, you just don't go there.
Strange, isn't it? Because it's such a powerful driver for humanity, obviously, and animal world, animal kingdom. And yet still so much shame around it. People just find it so hard to talk about, like what they really want sexually, for example, or to talk about something like pornography. It's incredible. But yeah, but how much damage it will be doing. Like I read somewhere that a lot of like young men are basically functionally impotent because of pornography. Like they can't they lose the ability to even get an erection, even with pornography after a while, because they become so desensitized because of the material they've been viewing. And you just think, where does that leave a society? Well, it's pretty obvious where it leaves it, without any kids.
Yeah. Yeah. This is our most powerful evolutionary driver has been hijacked by Bullshit Incorporated. And it leaves a lot of our youth hapless, wandering through the world without any zest, pizzazz, and enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, it's like I'm seeing the time and I'm aware we need to wrap up in a minute, but I guess as a thought for an action point? It's like, it's kind of like you said, all you can do is live your own purpose, but there's something in this idea, I think, I know people have spoken about it, but just personally, and maybe I'm going to try role modeling it off the back of this conversation, is to have some element of digital detox. I discussed with a previous guest, actually, and a friend, and we talked about having I can't remember the term we came up with, but it was basically like a digital Sabbath where you would have like one day a week that was, and you could choose the day, but like, yeah, it's, this is my day of rest type of thing. So maybe it's a Saturday, maybe it's a Sunday, maybe it's, because it's obviously hard to do on a working day for most people, but yeah.
Sundays are going to be the best. We have that societal Sabbath that is there and we don't necessarily have to respond to people on Sunday. Like it's societally sanctioned that you can take a day of rest and get back to people on Monday. But if you're right, professionally, people are reaching out and it's a Tuesday and you don't get back to somebody, they're going to be freaking out in this frantic world that we live in. It is growing exponentially with technology.
Maybe it'll fix itself because we'll end up with some kind of huge EMP strike or whatever, and all the electronics will go down. Maybe it has to get to that level. Because like me and you, obviously, we both recognize the danger of it, and yet we're both still admitting we've got sore necks from too much tech use. So it's like, how does it? Is there an element of self-corrective that's going to happen? Maybe it has to. Because I think that society is just so bound up in it. Go on.
Yeah, you know, I listen really, really closely to like Dr. Huberman. You know, he's got the largest health and wellness podcast on earth. And, you know, he just had a neurologist I forget the guy's name, but he's a, you know, famous, neurologist, sorry. And world renowned. And, you know, that he's posing these questions and asking, like, is this constant switching, task switching, is it good for the prefrontal cortex? And the answer was no. So I mean, they're starting. Yeah. So this is something that we need to be factoring in. And if we have big dreams that we want to get done and we want to execute on, and we need to understand how our brain works, and the flow state is something we want to get into and to be dialed in, where we have massive creativity, productivity, and learning. And when we're having all these little distractions and all these little things that are pulling our energy away, you know, here it takes 10 to 20 minutes to get back into that if we get back into that flow state at all. And so again, protecting our energies, realizing that these devices are a blessing. We're here. I think they're a blessing all in all, but maybe that's debatable too. But they have us connected so we can share our message and to serve our circle of influences. But, you know, taking the appropriate respect for just how addictive these things are. I mean, the top five tech companies, last I checked, their market cap was $8 trillion, something crazy like that. And it's all based on fracturing our attention.
Yeah. So when you remind me of that fact, it makes me more rebellious and want to have a whole weekend, never mind just the digital Sabbath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate that you didn't try and close the deal there on coaching me, but I am genuinely interested in how your program works. So maybe you could shoot me any kind of info or website link or anything, and I'll put it in the show notes when I get around to publishing this pod in case anyone else is interested. And maybe you could just let people know about your LinkedIn, for example, and any website right now as well, verbally, before we sign off.
Yeah, sure thing. People can reach out to me at worththefightbook.org. I'm also on Instagram @worththefightbook, and I do extend to your audience and to you as well a free 30-minute fostering flow empowerment session where we can shine light on the wondrous possibility on the path ahead, maybe some obstacles and challenges you might be struggling with. And I do offer 10-week magic and microdosing mentorship programs. And as an act of civil disobedience, I do gift the medicine when there's an aligned intention and someone is willing to embark on the brave journey within. This is powerful medicine, the magic mushrooms. This is the magic in microdosing mentorship. So I do encourage my clients to dream big. And thank you for having me. I enjoyed our discussion and I appreciate you and appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thanks, Matt. Well, I'm definitely going to take you up on that 30-minute session. So I'll message you afterwards about that. Thanks, buddy.
Let's do it. Absolutely. Peace. Take care.
Likewise. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.